So there is the need for more to enhance me that is never complete, the story of me that hasn't quite worked the way it was supposed to work up till now. There are not many humans who feel that the story has gone very well indeed, the story of me. And if there are some, all you have to do is wait a little. And then the incompleteness returns, the sense of incompleteness. And people believe this is their personal problem. Everybody else seems to be okay except me. The sense, this is built into the very structure of that conceptualized identity. Its need for more, its need for conflict in order to enhance its separate sense of existence. This is the me and this is the other. Now I need to get a strong sense of me. If I can be in conflict with something or someone, it enhances my sense of self. Or if I can take something away from another, in my delusion, I believe that that will also enhance my sense of self. And that could be just a thought form that I'm trying to take away from somebody through making a remark that diminishes the sense of self of another person. I question anything that that person identifies with as not good. Your car is no good. This dress would look good on your sister. Little remarks, all these, they are unconsciously designed to diminish another person's sense of self. They don't know what they are doing, and they believe if they can diminish somebody else's sense of self, they have enhanced their own sense of self a little bit. All that it means is the illusion of me has grown a little. So all you have enhanced is the illusion. But to the illusion, it feels great for a little while. And so it can become extremely greedy. The need for more is incessant. We see that the same egoic entity becomes collective in a corporation. We've read about these things recently, and we were surprised to see how greedy these big corporations are. Their whole reason for being seems to be to accumulate more. Perhaps in some cases the people at the top didn't even forgot what they manufactured. It was, and it didn't matter anymore what, except we need more. So a greedy entity is simply a magnification of that mind pattern. So let's not fall into the trap of saying there are a few, all these directors, they are evil. No, they are just in a position to be more greedy than others. And so the same mind pattern operates on all levels. It becomes the terrorist. What does he do? How can somebody kill hundreds or thousands of people, even himself or herself, in the what is going on in here? And people are at a loss to understand what are they doing? Well, it's very simple. They live in and through a conceptualized entity, which to a large extent is, in their case, collective. It's a collective me, based on their conditioning, their religion, their upbringing, their belief systems, their story, the collective story of us. And they don't know it's a story, the way they interpret reality. It is the truth to them. They are totally identified with those thoughts that make up the self. Complete identification with thinking. Self-identification with thinking. So you have a collective conceptualized entity, an us. And that entity has its own version of reality. which isn't recognized as a version of reality, it is reality to that entity. In that entity, then, you've already deadened yourself to the deeper aliveness that is there underneath all those mind movements, underneath the conceptualized me, the deeper consciousness that is not conditioned, the dimension that is in every human being, underneath the conceptualized sense of self that is conditioned form, thought forms, underneath that, this is the redemptive factor in human existence. Underneath that is a dimension of consciousness that we could describe as unconditioned, vast. But they don't know that. The terrorist certainly doesn't know it, and as yet, most humans don't know it, but more and more are waking up to it now. The terrorist is so deeply identified, and that's only an extreme manifestation of the same, that's everywhere, so deeply identified with the conceptualized that the entire identity is derived from those mind movements. He's already dead to the deeper aliveness within him or her. And then when you live through a conceptualized sense of self, you manufacture a conceptualized identity for everybody else. You impose mental labels on other people and groups of people. You call them something, a word, a set of words, and to you that is the reality of those human beings. They are mental labels, they are thought forms that you impose on another. You can do it to an individual or to a group. And once you have deadened yourself, you're no longer relating to another human being, you don't even see them anymore as human beings. You are totally trapped in mind, totally trapped in thought. And thought is an abstraction. You impose an abstraction on the sacredness and aliveness of another human being. And that is what you relate to. And then you've basically already killed them. Their aliveness is not there anymore. You don't know it. The next step can easily be physical violence, and you will not know what you are doing. You are operating in the realm of mental abstraction, and you're reducing the world to that, and you are making, you love your enemies, not in the sense of Jesus. You love your enemies, you love having enemies in that mindset. The terrorist loves having enemies. He doesn't love his enemies, but he loves having enemies because they enhance his sense of self, the us. So all these remove America, and in many countries, collective identity would suddenly dissolve. Who are we now without those on whom we can project something? The enemy is gone. There was even within America, because the same structure operates in everyone, when Russia ceased to be the enemy, there was, one could sense a little bit of sense of loss in certain circles. What are we doing now? We've lost our main enemy. They even made a humorous film about that, where the President of the United States gets together, he's seeking re-election, and he gets together with an advisor and says, we need an enemy. Come on. And since it's a humorous film, they come up with Canada as their enemy. The most unlikely enemy, they manufacture it and it works. So this, the need for an enemy to enhance one's sense of self is very great in the collective. It happens. Germany, National Socialism, the same egoic entity which became collective, it's a very dangerous entity on all levels. And they ended up with the whole world became their enemy. Great, now we know who we are. Who are you? Well, Germans, we are. That's who we are. A concept in the head. A conceptual entity. It's a dangerous thing, very dangerous thing. And on a personal level, it operates in the same way. And that's been going on for so long. Well, how does it operate on a personal? Who is your enemy? It doesn't have to be a person or a group of people. The enemy can be a place, a situation, wherever you are, something you complain about in your head. And you might have noticed that that entity loves complaining too. Reacting against something and complaining about it, because in every complaint, it strengthens itself a little. Because if I complain about a place or a situation or another person, I've put myself in the mental position of rightness. I am right, because but the complaint, the assumption underneath the complaint is that I'm right, and what I'm complaining about is wrong, obviously. That's the underlying assumption behind every complaint. I'm not talking here about complaint that you, in order to change a situation, you go and call somebody up and says, you delivered the wrong thing, I ordered a TV and you delivered a washing machine. These are perfectly fine. Or you tell the waiter, I ordered a salad, not the soup. On that level, complaint is fine, it's purely functional, but that is very little. But the other complaining that goes on is the self-talk in the head, which sometimes also becomes verbal, of course, where you complain and you can't do anything about it, nor are you even trying to do anything about it, you just want to be right. And that's an unconscious need to feel a slightly stronger sense of self. So every complaint is an attempt to be a little bit more of me. And then it wears off after a few minutes and you need something else to complain about. And you can see people how sometimes they look for the one thing that's not right in a situation. They look for this little stain in this beautiful carpet and then their focus is on the stain. But this really bothers me. Why didn't they do anything about that stain? But that stain is 2% of the carpet. Yeah, but they shouldn't have. Why don't they? Drop the complaining, and that already diminishes your sense of self. I don't know who I am anymore. And then come the problems, my problems, that I need to think about day and night. Problematic situations, they've been going on for years. Complex, very complex. And you can wake up in the middle of the night and suddenly you get this overwhelming mind stream of your complex problems. Oh. And they've been going on for years. But it's vital that you think about it now. Think. And underlying all that thinking is, what's going to happen to me? So that sense of identity loves its problems, loves its enemies, loves conflict, but it never tells you that openly. It needs to remain unconscious, because if you make it conscious, you even start to laugh. And that's very liberating. If you laugh at patterns that you discover within yourself and you see them, that even sitting here is liberating when you suddenly see conditioned mind patterns. There's nothing personal in it, just human conditioned mind patterns, and you see them. Seeing is the beginning of being free of them. Seeing means you're no longer totally identified with the pattern. The main enemy, really, it all boils down to the main enemy of the mind-made self, the one thing that is doesn't like and wants to get away from and is not happy with and often complains about, doesn't really, it's this moment. It doesn't like it. Or it ignores it completely because the next moment is so much more important. This is why I have to think and think about what's going to happen. Just this moment, at the most, it's a stepping stone that gets me to the next one. It's more important than this, that's for sure. And what is the next moment? It's future. And where is the future? Has anybody ever encountered it? No. I've been waiting for it a long time. But all I could ever find was this moment. But one day, it's going to come. Just a little bit longer. And so you see what seems so overriding, so overwhelmingly real, time, past and future, seems to dominate everything. You can't get out of time. It drags you along until finally you collapse and die. It seems so overwhelmingly real, this time thing, and yet nobody has ever encountered it. All you can ever experience, find, is this moment. So if you go more deeply, you actually discover that time and thought are so intrinsically related as to be virtually one. And you discover all that future is, ultimately, is a thought form in the head, in the human mind. It's not here now. Is the future here? Only this. Only now. And then we can check again in 5 minutes' time. You can see the paradox. 5 minutes later, it's still no. Now, if we try to work this out intellectually, it won't take us anywhere. We might write a PhD about it. Is whether time is real or not. But all we need to see at first hand that your life is always now. Of course it is. It's always this, just this. The rest is thought forms. Now, because people are so trapped in thought forms with their sense of self, that they give that greater importance than this. And that's a delusion. And so they are cut off from the deeper levels of their being that are, can only be encountered when the movement away from this comes to an end. In other words, your attention, instead of being absorbed by thinking, moves into the immediacy of now. That is the meaning of waking up, a spiritual awakening. What do you awaken from? What do you awaken out of? You awaken out of thought. self-identification with thought into now. And then the mind comes back and says, and now what? You may notice when your attention moves into now, a certain alertness comes with that. You may become more aware of your sense perceptions. And you may also notice when you are present in this moment, the compulsion to label all your sense perceptions and experiences drops away, and you are able to look at something, or more importantly, someone, a human, but let's just stay with non-human for a while. You're able to look upon something, or listen to something, or touch something without compulsively, immediately, mentally putting a label on it, calling it something, or arriving at some conclusion about it, or comparing it to something. You can be with something like a tree or a flower and simply look without labeling. That is a new state of consciousness arising, where you are moving out of the trap, the prison of compulsive conceptualized thinking. And above all, where your sense of identity or your sense of self shifts from being the thinker or the thought to being the awareness that is prior to thought. That's an amazing thing to happen to a human being. It begins with such a simple thing as being able to look at something or touch it. And it's being perceived within a field of spaciousness. Or we could say, stillness. Have you become unconscious? No. There's consciousness, but not the labels, not thinking. There are many of you, because I know this is happening on the planet to more and more people now, there are many of you who already experience that in your daily life from time to time. And you may not even notice that this is what's happening, that you are simply able to be with something without calling it anything. And you may perceive that only as a peace in the background. There's a certain sense of peace in the background. And through that, you're perceiving the world. You can then walk through the city, or drive through the city, mostly, here, without being there as a conceptualized entity and perceiving the world through the conditioned mind structures. So you are there as a behind the wheel of your car, a driving story of me. And whatever you You perceive only just enough so that to not be involved in an accident, but you're thinking about important things. My life situation, which is involves past and future. Future matters so much. I'm on my way. Where to? The future. And you continuously miss this. This. So the arising of spaciousness inside yourself is really what it is. And until you find some space within yourself, which even that is not quite right, because that space is the essence of who you are, without that space you can look for happiness for 100 lifetimes. Where is it? Because you're only looking to objects in your consciousness, believing that when I've accumulated enough objects in my consciousness, I'll be full and complete. Object in consciousness means thoughts. Object in consciousness means whatever happens to you becomes an object in consciousness. You don't experience the world out there. Whatever you experience as the world happens inside you. Who knows whether there's anything out there at all? Everything that you, the speaker here on the chair, where is that happening to you? The words, where are they? They are inside you. They are arising in consciousness. So humans are looking for themselves through what I call sometimes object consciousness. They are obsessed with the world of objects. The world of things, not just material things around them, that of course they're also obsessed with, situations, events, the next thing and another thing, and the world of things impinges upon you continuously saying, this matters, everything matters, oh, what's the next thing I need to deal with? And you can never catch up, so many things. And your life becomes a burden of things, and then they're the things inside, really. Every thought is an object that arises in consciousness. And there's a stream of thinking, one thought after another. This is what Thoreau referred to when he said, our life is frittered away by details. Simplify, simplify. Details are the worlds of things, objects in consciousness. So you get, you're like a room full of furniture and you can't move in it anymore. And you think you need more. No sense of spaciousness within. And potentially, the dimension of space consciousness as opposed to object consciousness, which is thought, is in everyone. Underneath the movement of thought, there's the vast spaciousness, already fully developed, fully complete in every human being. And the essence of who you are is that. Not anything that arises in object consciousness, but you are the very spaciousness that is beyond objects, things. So really, all that is required is to discover in oneself that dimension of consciousness, and thus realizing the fullness of being and of yourself that is already here. That's the end of seeking. Not the end of doing, but the end of self-seeking through doing. Then doing becomes quite nice. It's a play. You participate in the game of the universe. You cannot not do. so you might as well participate. You do. It's a dance. But self-seeking goes out of the doing because you've already found yourself, not as a conceptual entity, as the depth, the still, spacious field within yourself. You can't, future cannot help you to get there. It can only prevent you from finding it. And what is the quickest real way to realizing the truth of this? What is there a shortcut